listening to Fakeologist Audio, a periodic audio where I explore the world of media fakery. You can find my blog at fakeologist.com, where you'll find all the links to the live stream and audio archive. You'll also find links to my sublogs, forum, email, PayPal, Twitter, and YouTube. We now use Discord for all our interactive audio and text. To join in on any live conversation, go to our main page and connect to the Discord server on the right, or visit bit.ly/fakechat. Now, here's your host, the Fakeologist, Avarado. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. It is Sunday, April 1st, 2018. You just heard Rose Tattoo by Remedy, or you heard Remedy by Rose Tattoo. I can't remember which way that goes, but that is my guest who is joining me now. It's one of his songs that he likes, and I assume that they're from Australia. Let me just say hi to my guest, Rick S. Exoterica. Exoteric 64, rather. Good morning.
Hi, Ebs. Good morning. Good evening. Well, good morning.
Good morning and a good evening there. I hear crickets in the background.
Yeah, you can. Is it that picking it up? Probably would be.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Are you in the jungle there? I've got you listed as from Port Macquarie, New South Wales, Australia.
That's it. Yeah. And there are crickets. I can go inside if it's going to be noisy.
No, that's fine. Is it a hot fall day there?
No, it was a beautiful day. It was probably 30 degrees or something or other. It was
good
just
Lord.
Lovely.
Are all days hot and steamy down in Australia all year round?
No, they've been very humid of late and not as hot as it used to be. It's cooler than it used to be, and that's going to upset a few weather broadcasters, but it's very pleasant. It's a great spot.
Wow, beautiful. Well, this is what I call an impromptu show on the Fakeologist Network. Sometimes we broadcast on Fakeologist Radio 2, where you can listen live. But I'm making this a full show because this is Fakeologist 190, and it's one guest and about 1 hour. That's how I'm...
It's perfect.
That's how I'm separating the shows. I've got the audio chats for people just come in and out and storm in and out, and sometimes they turn in amazing shows, but they're more informal and loose, like coffee houses. But I'm going to try and do a proper interview. And I don't usually do an interview early in the morning here because I'm usually out and about. But today is an official stat holiday here in Canada. So I thought I'd get up early not to interrupt my sleep biorhythm. Because if you sleep in one day, it's hard to get up the next. So even though I'm a little late for today's broadcast, I apologize to Rick, but
no, it's fine. All fine.
We were all getting messed up because you're getting rid of your daylight savings time. We started ours a month ago, so there's this incredible interruption in our clocks.
Biorhythms.
It's hard enough to try and figure out what time it is there, what time it is here. I use a website called timeanddate.com. It's pretty good.
I use that today too.
Although you could just go to your Windows clock if you've got a Windows machine and add a city. And I've got three clocks. I've got my clock, Brisbane, and London on my little clock on the bottom. If you click your clock in Windows, a little technical tip, and you can see the times with the dates, well, with the day of the week anyway. So it's pretty useful. So how are you? How are you, Rick? How'd you get here?
I am a podcast addict.
Ooh, so I love those people.
I listen to, and I'm not joking, up to 17 hours a day.
How do you do that?
Podcast.
How do you have time?
I have my business. I have a cleaning kind of property maintenance business that I don't have to think at my job, so I can just have the radio in my ear. So since I worked out how to use podcasts, I've been, podcasting. So, and before that, it was just normal radio. So I had radio in my ear, the AM radio, the FM, mainly talk stations or info stations. I love information. And at the moment, I picked up you guys through Hoax Busters, which was one of my favorite ones that I got into about 2 years ago.
Oh, great. How'd you find Hoax Busters?
Just through iTunes, I think it came up as a suggested. Yeah. And you guys come up as well.
Oh, do we? Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I don't really pay attention to iTunes, and also I don't have an iPhone, so I don't really look into it.
Well, yeah, it's been the savior for me in my brain, I think, because it's been something I've been able to listen to who I wanted to listen to without screaming at the radio and throwing things at it. You know, when you're listening to normal mainstream radio, which I can't do anymore. It's gone over here.
And your name is Exoteric 64. That implies that you were born in 64?
Yeah, and I was. I was 5 when the moon landings happened.
Oh, you're 3 years older than myself.
Okay. And I was the first thing I heard that I can remember on TV was The Prisoner. And then I watched the moon landings, and Doctor Who was on at the same time with an episode about the moon getting invaded by Cybermen. And then at 6 or 7, I was allowed to go and see Diamonds Are Forever, which I saw that scene where the moon landings were shown as being on a soundstage. And then I watched Capricorn 1 when I was 9.
Wow. And what did you think then?
You put 2 and 2 together, and, you know, you just...
You put a 2 and 2 together when you were 9?
Yeah. I just thought, you know, it was in your face.
Oh, wow,
kind of
you're
stuff,
a smart
you know?
Guy. Yeah. So you've been awake since you were 9?
Yeah, cynical since I was 9.
Oh, that's amazing.
I don't know. Yeah. So, they dragged the Gemini landing vehicle through New Zealand when I was a 7-year-old. It went to every major regional town so you could go and look at it and sit in it. Maybe not sit in it, but you could go and touch it. There was a real heavy push for that whole moon landings thing. They said it was the real Gemini 12, was it? Or I can't remember. The actual Armstrong, Aldrin.
Is that the lunar Collins. Lander?
No, the one that came through the atmosphere and, the one that looks like an ice cream, which actually was an ice cream in New Zealand in 1969. You can get an ice cream that was called a Gemini. And it was the same shape as the moon, the entrance vehicle that they came back to Earth in. So it's been a really strong part of growing up, that whole space, moon landings, whatever, thing is the best word I can say.
Yeah, I'm looking now. I got the Gemini 12 under Wikipedia, but that doesn't look like the ice cream one.
It was Gemini something, and they dragged it around a trailer, and it appeared like I remember going with my father and watching. You know, we were allowed to go, and there's a huge queue to walk past, and you could touch it and look at it. That would have been 71, 72. And looking back on it, to think that there was 3 guys and there were these giant spacesuits on, it's just kind of, you know, ludicrous, really.
So you were a doubter back then in the 70s?
I wasn't a doubter, but it just struck me up. When you go to see Capricorn 1 was a real eye-opener as far as a movie that was saying that the moon landings were fake. I think they were saying it was a Mars landing, or I can't remember what it was, but it gets into your head that it might be something was sus about it. And there were certainly people around those days that were saying there's no way they got to the moon.
Take a look in the live stream show notes on the Discord server. I put a link to Historic Aircraft. Maybe you click on that and tell me if that's the ice cream cone that you saw. So the Gemini was an ice cream cone in Australia as
I wasn't here then. I came here in 85. So I grew up in New Zealand for 21 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I was just a part of that era that we grew up with. We had Vietnam War going on. you know, you'd Sesame Street.
Yeah. You got all that in New Zealand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sesame
Street was massive, you know.
Did they buy the program, I suppose, over in...
Yeah, we only had one channel when I grew up.
Okay.
We had one TV channel. It was run by NZBC. It was very BBC-ish, you know, so we got the same stuff as...
There was only one over-the-air broadcast? Could you receive broadcasts from Australia, or is that too far?
No. We had one channel until 74 when they introduced colour TV, and then we got two channels. And then I was there till... Yeah, and then I was there till 85, and then eventually Sky TV turned up, the Murdoch network, and there was, you know, more channels and that. Now I think they've got about 8 or 9.
That just shows how slow. Obviously, New Zealand's a small country in the middle ocean, and it just shows that technology, even though it was going pretty good in the 60s in America, it took quite a while to go across into smaller countries, I suppose. Obviously, it costs a lot of money to run a TV station.
Yeah, and I think Australia had 4 channels for most of the time.
Mm.
They were very, very similar. And then
in Canada, we're all along the border of the United States. So we had probably a few of our own, but then 10 of American channels that were broadcast, all the major ones.
Yeah.
They all come across the lake or the border or wherever you are. And the border, as people know, I'm an American and a Canadian. I like both countries a lot. And
so you got 2 passports?
Yes.
Cool.
I like both countries, and I was just looking at some of my holiday material where I was going along the border in British Columbia, our westernmost province, and
I was saying Canada and New Zealand are very similar places.
As Australia.
Yeah, Australia's is huge. It's more America than Canada, whereas Canada is very green and beautiful rivers, and New Zealand's exactly the same.
You know, I'm definitely going to go to New Zealand one of these days.
Oh, you must. You've got to go there. It's just absolutely beautiful.
I'm sure it is. And my wife has been to New Zealand. She went. Her sister was there, and she went to visit her for about half a year. So she's been, I believe, Christchurch. I think that's where they were.
To be honest, I've never been over that side of the thing, but half my family are there now.
Isn't that amazing? A little country like New Zealand, and you haven't been to the whole thing?
No, it's unbelievable.
Then,
I mean, it's amazing though, but growing up in New Zealand, like if you, back in the 70s, if you drove to say from where I grew up was a town called Tauranga.
Oh, that's right at the top. I'm looking at New Zealand now.
It's in that, Tauranga's in the middle, kind of. And to drive to Wellington.
Well, it's in the middle. It's in the top of the North Island, right?
Yeah. It's in that area. But
is it called the North Island?
It's called, North Island. Yeah,
okay.
That's what we call it. And to drive to Wellington was a 6-hour drive.
Whoa.
And New Zealander would stay, could never envisage driving a 6-hour drive. They would drive to a New Zealander. We were growing up in this little country, but it may as well have been the world to us. And to drive to Wellington, you'd stay halfway in a motel. You'd drive 3 hours and stop off. In Australia, an Australian will drive 12 hours without getting out of, or maybe to go to the toilet once.
Oh, wow.
Because it's just a different spatial
area. Are there any high-speed highways in New Zealand?
High speed
being 100 kilometers an hour or 55 miles per hour?
No, 100 kilometers is probably normal on the freeways. Here in Australia, it's 110, but it stops every now and then, becomes 100, and then it goes to 90.
Yeah, but do they have that in New Zealand?
It's 100, I think, but then you're constantly going through little towns where you've got to slow down to 50.
Yeah. So you don't have any your high, you don't have any big highway systems that bypass the city centers.
Yeah, I haven't been back there for a while, but it is better to travel now than it was when I grew up. Mm.
Well, I'm just looking. I'm looking at a map of New Zealand, and I can't say that I know it that well, but yeah, Christchurch is halfway down or a third of the way down the South Island.
South Island.
And actually, at the very beginning of this broadcast, way in the old days, I actually had someone who said he was on Stewart Island, of all places.
Oh, wow.
Right at the bottom.
To meet someone from Stewart Island, yeah, it's a miracle to meet someone from there because it's the tiniest little spot.
Yeah, and he was describing some of the Masonic obelisks in the main town. Yeah, it was amazing. And I went and looked it up on Google Earth or Maps or whatever you want to call it, and he was describing it correctly.
Wasn't surprised because both my grandfathers were Mason.
Oh, wow.
It was very common.
Yeah. Can you get a little closer to your phone? You want a little quiet.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, there. Better? That's better, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Don't want to miss a thing.
Yeah.
Well.
When I say Masons, they were in the very low level, obviously, but one lost his money and got thrown out. And
that's when they're supposed to come together and help you.
I don't think that quite happens in the low levels. I think it happens in the middle levels. Yeah, they would have been. I mean, when you speak to the average person about, especially in America, you know, most parents, there was a great deal of people who always say, "Oh yeah, my granddad was a Mason or a Moose or whatever they call them." You know, in New Zealand, you know, to have both my grandfathers being Masons was odd. To think that, but none of them had money. What my one did and the other didn't. But when I say money, they were, you know, he worked as a for the government in broadcasting and the post office. And I think that was a common thing amongst the average person back in the days to be a member of a lodge.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But
they're not. It's not inherently evil. I've never said it was. I just said that
at the lowest levels, I totally think it was just one of those things that was part of growing up and being, because we're very, New Zealand is very Britain, very English, and when I grew up there, we may as well have been in all our TV shows came from England.
Sure.
But I met Canadians when I was there, and they loved it. When they came there, they just thought this was the best place ever because it was like this little tiny version of Canada with logging and trees and beautiful rivers.
We don't have sheep here, though. Not as much.
You don't? Yeah. Oh, well. We certainly did.
I've never seen any big sheep pastures anywhere. Of course, there's sheep on farms, but I don't think.
Yeah, but you've got bears.
Well, we got everything here.
Bears and sheep wouldn't mix.
No, not on Looney Tunes anyway. Not in the cartoons they get. But yeah, I'm just looking. You've got a lot of British sounding places, but mostly native sounding. Mostly native-sounding places.
Oh, we do now. But and it's that's the most amazing thing about New Zealand. Like the Maori or Māori, as they meant to, you supposedly pronounce it, had a massive. I grew up on a battle site of one of the most famous battles in New Zealand in the Maori Wars, and the British got beaten by the Maoris on this particular battle because the Maoris had developed trench warfare, and it was the battle's called Gate Pa, so Gate Pa, and Pa means fortress in Māori. And the British, when there was a rebellion against the British taking over, they'd surrounded a particular area in Bay of Plenty called Gate Pa, which was the gateway to the area, and they shelled the area for 2 days straight, or maybe more, I'm not sure, but they just expected to be walking up the hill to pick up dead bodies. And the Maori had dug fortifications that went down and then on a 45-degree angle underneath that, so they were perfectly fine. They jumped up and killed all the British soldiers that were going up the hill. And that was a real slap in the face to the British. And so they flooded that country back in 1860, 1870 with Australians, Scots, whatever, just to go and wipe out this insurgency. And, you know, blow me down, they did a deal called the Treaty of Waitangi in the end of it, where they, one of the bigger Maori tribes, did an agreement that the British were allowed to take a certain amount of land and they were given a certain amount of land. Whereas I don't think any other tribe, like in India and South Africa and whatever, none of the indigenous tribes got a treaty with the British, but the Maori did, which is quite special when you look at the.
Did the Maori run the whole island? Pretty much.
They're very much, very much. It's when you go there now. When I grew up, if you kids, friends of mine that were, if you spoke Maori, you were like, you get a smack across the hand by your teacher. It was forbidden to speak the language, but now it's compulsory to speak the language. So it's.
When you grow up as a New Zealander, you have to speak it? No,
you do now. Yeah, absolutely. If you want a job in government, you must go and do te reo, or whatever. I'm not that confident the language, but you must go and do a course where you can speak confidently the language to understand it. There's a real solid. It's completely the opposite to everywhere else. Mm. So it's amazing, and there's a really good feeling there. When there's not this that. In Australia, we've got a real problem with the Koori or Aboriginal, where they weren't treated the same way, and they've been treated very similar to in Canada and America, where they've been just put in areas and allowed to kind of drop off. Is the best way I can describe it. The Maori were never treated like that. They were treated quite as equal in a lot of ways. So it's when you go, there's not that kind of seething hatred of racism that you kind of pick up on in Africa and America with the native races that really just there's a bit of equality going on in New Zealand, which is a good thing, I think.
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at the map again of New Zealand. Is Auckland your biggest city or Wellington?
Wellington is the cultural city. So Wellington is where the cultural, we've got Weta Studios with Peter Jackson has set up his film areas. And
what is the capital?
The capital is Wellington.
Oh, the capital is Wellington. And, okay.
Yeah. And our building, interestingly enough,
is the Beehive? Political
building. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. And
the Hive Mind.
Auckland, the Hive Mind, big time. Well, but of course, Auckland's the biggest city per land mass. It's massive, you know, as far as the size goes, it goes out. I never liked Auckland. I didn't like it.
Oh, Auckland has 1.5 million people, and it's an area of 1,000 square kilometers.
Yeah. Wellington's a great place. My family originally came from there.
You were from Tauranga, and that's the fifth biggest city.
Tauranga. Yeah, but
only 137,000 people there. Boy, what a little tiny place. It really is true. There's more sheep than people there in Australia.
Yeah.
So how did you make it over to Australia? Why are you there?
My father came here when I was 12 or 13. He left, you know, the family split up thing. And we came here to work, actually. And I came over when I was 18. And lived with him, and it was a wake-up call to be a, you know, because my mother had spoilt me as being, you know, he used to do everything for me, and all of a sudden I was confronted with having to make my own bed and all that. And I lasted a year, then I went back, and then I came back again, and I haven't left since. And I love, Sydney's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful city. It's not so good now. I think it's looking really run down, and it's being flooded with people without infrastructure being built, which is the same, I think, in Canada and a couple. I think Toronto has a similar situation to Auckland and Terry, with an awful lot of Chinese. migration and
yeah, we have a lot of Easter, Asians, It's not running it down though. Toronto is still booming, I would say. I wouldn't call it run down.
Yeah. No, I don't mean that when I say that, but when you bring more migrants than you have spent on roads and hospitals, then you're going to have issues, and that's what's happening. We've got a lot of homeless, and even Tauranga is now has a homeless issue because Auckland's now, I think if you look on the most popular name in Auckland is now Chow, or it's a Chinese, there's five Chinese names above Smith.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
funny.
And the property prices are through the roof.
Yeah.
And so places like where I'm from now have homeless people. Just sure. People from Auckland that have made all this money on their properties in Auckland have brought in Tauranga. And for the first time ever, you've got people, the rentals are too expensive and the camping grounds are too expensive. So you've literally got homeless in an area where you should never have, well, I certainly wasn't there when I was there.
Well, I just looked up Tauranga and I think Napoleon might have dropped a link in the Discord live stream show notes, which is the only thing you should put there, by the way. And it looks very tropical there. I see palm trees, and obviously it's quite warm all year round.
I picked up pneumonia there one time when I went back there. So it gets cold. The temperature drops. It can be really warm and hot in the sun, and then you get to about 4 o'clock and the sun goes, and then you go straight down to like 12 degrees
or less.
But we don't, in the afternoon, but we don't get the Canada cold. When I went to school in the 70s, there'd be ice all over the playground, ice, you know, like frost. But I can remember going to school in 1974 or whatever it was, and the Maori kids who didn't wear shoes, it was not part of their culture, would just go to school, but no problem whatsoever, and they'd be running and, you know, skating along the ice on the footpath or on the at the school playground. There was no fit. It was just they didn't notice what I certainly noticed. It was really cold. It was just their culture. They grew up there without shoes. So yeah.
Well, for anyone who wants to know, the temperature in Tauranga right now is 15 Celsius.
Okay, well, that's pretty.
The average temperature is about 14 or 15 in July, which is the dead of your winter, we're told.
I think it's not as nice as here, but it's certainly nothing what you get in Canada, where you're getting 20 below, 30 below, or according to Alan Watt, 40 below.
Well, where he is, Sudbury, allegedly, it can get super cold up there. A cold night, super cold night in the dead of winter could be minus 40 Celsius. Yeah, that's bone chilling.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, you can't really function in that, which is why I'm all in support of global warming, because what could be how could warming up be bad? Just tell me, how could warming up be bad? Okay, less polar bears, they'll just have to move north.
I agree, totally.
That's another inverted thing. How could us warming the planet be a bad thing? It makes no sense.
It's a good thing. It is inversion, total inversion. And you don't need to start me on that subject.
No. Well, we could go all over the place. But anyway, you've been a skeptic for since you were 9, which is amazing. So what happened? The biggest thing that I created this website for was 9/11. So on 9/11,
I sat up, I think it was about 11 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night, our time, or they were playing the same looped. It was the same. I picked up on the first Gulf War that we got here. The night before that war started, we didn't have Foxtel. We didn't have round-the-clock news channels. And all of a sudden, Channel 10 in Sydney went bankrupt, and they had to, all of a sudden, they just changed to basically CNN or Fox, and they just played the looped green kind of bombing. There's vague images of bombings, and I remember picking up. Why would a TV channel go broke the night before a war started? and it did. And so we got round the clock, 24-hour live stream TV from America of this. You'd basically see like flashes in the distance and stuff
like that.
You're
talking about the Gulf War between August 2nd, 1990 and 28th, February 1991, yeah.
That's right, yeah. And when 9-1-1 happened, it was the same looped footage. Yeah, whatever you turn the TV on, you're watching the same image of the explosion, the same plane going over the top, going in. And I remember it was Mel Gibson's father, or Mel Gibson, that somehow I saw or heard him say they're remote controlled planes. And that pick, I believe that straight away. I thought, this just doesn't look right, you know. As fake as the first Gulf War start off, you know. It was a setup for the invasion of what eventually became Iraq. So I didn't know what I was watching, but I just didn't trust what I was watching. And it took years. I mean, I only watched the Simon Shack stuff 2 years ago, whatever, where the no plane stuff came in, and it didn't surprise me at all. I mean, I was in my mind was the it was Mel Gibson's father who was quoted as saying these are remote controlled planes, and I just believe that. I believe that up till I saw the no plane footage, and now I'm pretty shack like as far as you know the footage being just doctored and.
So you only started looking into 9/11 just recently, last couple of years? Is that what you're saying?
No. I've been listening and reading, and you know, I've got plenty of books. I'm a book collector, and I've read and seen. I didn't believe it was a, put it this way, I didn't believe the Osama bin Laden story at all.
Right.
I didn't know technically how they did it, but I knew it was controlled demolition. It was just in my gut instinct when I saw the building 734. I was in the building industry, so I've you know kind of pick up on how you can do things and how buildings fall. And I've watched enough buildings, and I think it was Las Vegas. They did a lot of controlled demolitions there.
Sure,
and it looked exactly the same as what I was watching. Like they demolished a couple of casinos back in the 80s or 90s. So, yeah, no, I've been a total skeptic about that since it happened. I did believe that it could have happened as a reaction to what America had been doing, and I believe there was a...
Yes.
It may have been...
I bought into that too. That's a good line, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. They call it blowback.
Blowback, yeah. I totally believe that, but since then, I'm a researcher, I literally read and listen non-stop. I mean, it's just been one of those things I've always done, so I've always been very skeptical about it. But and jumping forward, the H-bomb thing, I haven't believed in nuclear weapons for 15 years. Easy. And that was from reading a book by I read a book by Captain Bruce Cathy. He had a book called Harmonic 33. It was about, he was a UFO researcher, an ex-pilot from New Zealand. Because I was into UFOs from 71 or 70 to 84, 85. I was into UFOs. It was everything I could believe in. I watched the sky. Totally was into UFOs. I had every book. I read everything you could see. Me and my best friend went to the first New Zealand UFO conference when we were both 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
That was in Tauranga, and we went there. We were, of course, the youngest people there. And I listened to the anti-gravity stuff and all the bits and pieces, and read all these. I used to have all the American UFO research stuff. And I formed my own opinion probably in the late 70s that it was a military, everything we were seeing that was a bit funny was military. That was my opinion back then, that they weren't aliens. They were, prototype, because there was a lot of reports of triangular shaped craft that no one could explain. And then watching Gulf War One, we saw the first, triangular shaped fighter planes that all of a sudden appeared out of nowhere. And I remember thinking, these are the same things that people were reporting seeing over wherever the bases were, you know, but they were, when they were the prototypes. I'm a skeptic. That's the best way to, a cynical skeptic. And I'm ready to be proved wrong and will accept to be proved wrong most of the time. You know, I'm not going to get upset, but you see, you put two and two together with most stuff and you can see that you're being conned these
days.
Yes,
I'm just looking up Harmonic 33. I see it now.
Yeah, fantastic. Great book. What he said in that book is that he came across the fact that they kept using, that when they were doing nuclear tests, they were always using these particular times and dates, and he put them into his harmonic grid system thing, and that it came up that they were using exactly the same times and dates, and he ended up apparently visited by the intelligence agency to say, how did you know that there was a test in Mururoa Atoll on this date? And that's when he kind of confirmed that a nuclear bomb could, if they exist, could only be detonated at a certain time. And it had to be, there was a lot of, you know, the sun featured heavily in the equation.
So he just said that they couldn't do a nuclear bomb as they described, but I don't think he was disputing nuclear science then.
He was disputing the fact that you could just have a drop a bomb on Hiroshima at any time, or drop a bomb and blow a country up. And then another book, there was a huge, there was a New Zealand Christian author called Barry Smith who released five books, which I've got all in my collection here. They were called, books about the, you know, the Antichrist and the end of the world and stuff like that. He actually said in one of his books, because apparently he was friends with Bruce Cathy, he more or less said they're faked. And I sent that to the Hoaxbusters one when I first saw the thing. I actually took some photos of the books and sent them to Chris. This is probably 2 years ago, I guess, just to say, you know, this isn't the first time I've heard that story.
I wonder why he called it Harmonic 33. So that's another insight.
Yeah, funny,
the
funny,
33
funny,
is the signature.
Funny. Yep, funny that. But I don't know if Harmonic 33 was the first book. He released about four books or maybe more. And I think he's dead now. But he was certainly more into the UFOs and the fact of the grid system. But the grid system that he's picked up on is the grid system we've now got with the internet and because I don't believe the satellite things is completely fake to me. I believe everything's running on cable and land-based technology. I think if you there's certainly some truth in the harmonic books, because a friend of mine read the book and he goes, I'm going to go and check this out. And he reckons he went into the bush in New Zealand and one of the grid coordinates that Cathy said there should be a transmitter, and he found a fenced off satellite tower with barbed wire around it in the middle of the nowhere. You know,
so it's a repeater station. Yeah, sure.
And he found that he used the thing. So there's something in there.
Oh, sure.
I believe that all our internet is completely all run on landline.
Oh, sure. It's all land-based. Well, before, there used to be long-distance towers. They don't speak about long-distance telephone anymore. But I believe I saw a lot of, I think they were called microwave transmitter towers. And
yeah,
they were.
Yeah, everything's based on it.
And I remember seeing them, even in the city in Toronto, there were tall, super tall towers with microwave transmitters, and they were a rectangular shape, and they're aimed directly at another receiver transmitter so many miles away in the bush.
Yeah.
Now,
you
don't see those anymore because, of course, I think most of the phones, most of the voice connections are now using the internet to transmit, even though they call them landlines still. But obviously, internet telephony has taken over in the last 20 years. So actually, I've seen a few towers where they've removed those microwave transmitters. They're gone. And they just replaced them with normal cellular transmitters for local areas. Yeah. So they didn't take the tower down. They just repurposed it. But I think the microwave transmission is pretty much gone in the land-based area because now they just send everything through all the internet connections they built over the last 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, well, changing the subject kind of, I was working on one of the flashiest houses I've ever been on. It was the biggest. It was a beautiful, huge, huge house. And I was speaking to the guy. He was about the same age as me. And I said, oh, what do you do for work? And he said, oh, no, he was like the wholesaler for the underground cable. He said he sells cable to South America. Basically, he was the middleman that he sold the optic fiber optic cable into different countries. And he was the same age as me.
Yeah.
His house was worth about $7 or $8 million. That was his business. He said business. And I said, so how's business? He said, business is fantastic. Sure. So everything is running on cable, fiber optic cable, and not satellite. There's no two ways about that.
Just the official story of satellites is insane. If just from a basic engineering, if a satellite is 20,000, what is the official story?
20,000 miles.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Yeah. What kind of power would you need to create to transmit? We know how far just in basic our Wi-Fis work. Our Wi-Fis are good for maybe 200 feet before the signal's off.
Well, guess what? I just had to turn mine off. So
Yeah, because there could be a lot of interfering Wi-Fi coming in at the same frequency, just messing it up. So there's no way. Any power could send a signal 20,000 miles. Just on the surface, the idea is insane. Yeah. What kind of power source?
This is where you've got to go down to the basics of just using logic and not science. So, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, you went a little quiet there. But it's just crazy, the actual distance. It's not sensible. It makes no sense. There's no power source.
How could we see the Sputnik, which if you've ever seen a friend of mine built a life-size model of it. It's like not that much bigger than a couple of footballs together with some wires out of it. That apparently was visible to us here. I mean, that's, as I don't know who was the other night was saying, if you shot a, bright light on a small object like that, how far could you see it on the land? Well, you wouldn't be able to see it from a mile away.
Well, we know how big an airplane is, and when they're 6 miles up their normal cruising altitude, they're pretty damn small. And you can see them when the sun is shining against their metallic body, but with your eye, of course. But get a little closer to your phone there if you don't mind. Let me just play a little bumper here.
Okay.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support. And on that note, we haven't seen a donation here other than a couple subscribers in about a month. So there you go.
Guess what? I'm going to donate to you.
Oh, aren't you nice?
Yeah, I will.
Well, really, donation or an email. I don't know, and nobody in the podcast world knows that anyone's listening to them unless they either make a donation or send an email or a note or a participation. Of course, we have people that participate in our comments and our forums and our Fecalpedia. We know they're listening. But anyone else who's just listening, drop me an email at ima@fecologist.com. There's a million ways to contact me. I'm on Twitter. I'm not on YouTube. I'm not on Facebook. But we have a website, fecologist.com. There is a speak pipe, which is a little button you can press on the website and leave a voicemail. Of course, you can come on the Discord. The Discord is free and it's open. You just connect to it going to the main page of fecologist.com and click connect. You create a user ID and you can come on here and participate in the chat. The chat is way busier than the website and I can't even keep up with it. And you can join the audio chat and talk to other people. And there are probably 10 times more conversations that go on in the audio chat outside of the live stream than other places. I don't record them. Nobody can listen into them. So if you really think your discussion is worthy of recording, you've got to go into the audio chat live stream and leave your voices over there, and they will be recorded and uploaded to the website for others to hear. So there's tons of ways to interact. This is not a begathon. We're not looking for money. Honestly, that's not the purpose, but it's always nice. And if you want to just chip in $1.19 a month, that to me is great encouragement when I see lots of people doing that, because I know people are interested. And I still believe that all media that you like should be supported in a small or big way. Even if you just put in coffee money, that's good. And I agree with other podcasters who say, well, if 1,000 people put $1 a month, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it doesn't cost a lot of money to run the site. I'm not going to lie. It's not a big expense. I've got reasonable hosts that don't really charge too much. But it's really just the encouragement that I'm mostly interested in. So, yeah, please, you don't have to you don't have to pitch in, Rick, because you're obviously now.
No, I'm a total fakeologist.
Oh, I love it. Do you like the name? Do you like the term fakeologist? Is it something you can?
Absolutely. No, it's good. It's good. I'm gonna get a T-shirt made up.
I gotta get T-shirts as well. Actually, there is a Zazzle store. I created a Zazzle, Z-A-Z-Z-L-E, but even I can't remember where I put it.
you can't be as bad as me, surely.
No, you know what? I thought I put a link to it somewhere on Fakeologist. Actually, there is a link. Let me just go. Fakeologist.com. If you go to that website, and I made it easy, a one-word website. Up at the top, I think there's something called Shop. Shop. Where is it? Shop. Swag. Is it swag? Where is it here? I'm just looking here. Members. I'm not doing too well here. Spread things abs like. Oh, yeah. If you look under things ab likes, there's shop and swag. See, maybe that's why nobody can see it, because it's underneath things ab likes.
Okay.
So if you click on Zazzle, I don't think one person has bought even one thing. Not even one.
Oh, that's terrible. That's terrible. Do you want to talk about the matrix? Because I have some interesting insights on the film industry. Because
I just want to look on fakeologist.com. Okay, there's a 9/11 T-shirt. It's $28.80. I don't even know what kind of cut I get of that. And it says, "Ask me what a fakeologist is, and I'll tell you no lies." So I actually did.
I want one of them. How do I get them?
Go to zazzle.com/fakeologist.
Okay.
Man, I got to start promoting that. What is wrong with me? Mm. Because even I want one of those T-shirts. It's actually ridiculous that I haven't been promoting that. I put that up years ago. There's
and you're the creator.
Yeah.
And you haven't got one.
I don't have I have nothing. And it took quite a while to build this store, just to put all the graphics, and obviously they provide all the crap, the T-shirts.
You obviously know a lot more than I do about computers, because I'm so techno.
Well, there's
I'm picking it up.
Well, no, that's good. Here's a trucker hat. It just has one of my logos on the top. It says fakeologist.com. I'll put a link in the live stream show notes there. Oh, yeah, there it goes.
Cool.
So, yeah, there pick one up today. Now, if anyone wants to do a graphic that might look better than what I've done, just drop me an email or put it in the Discord, and I'll put it in there.
Chris Kendall, by the sound of it, knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's a graphics guy.
Yeah, get him, because he's that site is one of my favorite to listen to because of the humor. There's humor in it, and my favorite sites are guys that can drop humor, and because it is a depressing subject. There's no two ways about it. If you're going to sit there thinking about what's going on, you're going to get really depressed. But just listening to Jay Dodd and some of his stuff when he starts mimicking, he does his
impressions.
My favorite is as soon as he does a Cobra Commander impersonation, that's it. I laugh, and that's the most really important thing that I can say about anyone that's into this stuff.
Yeah,
if you haven't got a sense of humor, you're gone, because you're listening to stuff that's not happy. It's not cheerful. It's depressing.
I disagree a little bit with you on that. I think it's good news what we have to talk about, to be honest with you.
It is, especially the nuclear stuff. It's like, have you been, because because we had that, the day after screen, we were made to watch that in 78, 79.
Yes,
they came to the school and we were lined up and we marched in. I hated school. From the year, the first day I went, I hated it till when I left. I didn't feel comfortable.
How far did you get to school?
The New Zealand education system was a good system. I went to quite a good school. In Tauranga, which was a boys' school, where you were given, George Orwell was a compulsory subject, which makes me a bit wary about George Orwell now. But
sure,
we were made to read Animal Farm and 1984,
right.
And it wasn't something you were discouraged about. So I kind of was a good reader as far as that kind of stuff goes. And I enjoyed college more than I did primary school. I didn't like being taken to primary school when I was 5 and made, you were tiny and there was big kids around. I hated it. And I tried to escape every time. My mother was constantly chasing after me to drag me back in there every time she took me down there. Cause I just picked up that I didn't like what was getting taught. And thank God I didn't listen to anything. And thank God I failed, because if I'd taken what we were indoctrinated in, I'd be listening to ABC.
I just made a post on fakeologist.com. It says it's difficult to be a dissenter. And it says here. It says we often feel the need to go along with others in our group think. And neuroscience, if you believe in science, which I do to an extent. And neuroscience shows that this desire for conformity isn't just the result of peer pressure. It's wired into our brains. That I tend to believe. We really don't want to dissent.
No, and if you dare dissent, you are absolutely pilloried or whatever. You were made to feel that you're a nut if you disagreed with what was being taught. There's not a day goes by that I don't think, thank God I didn't listen to what they were telling me. Because I can give you an example. When I was in fifth form, which I would have been 14 or 15 or whatever age was, our subjects were kibbutzes, the New Zealand Labour Party, the history of the Labour Party, feminism. That was the subjects you had
like
to
communism.
Study.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what it was. And the best thing that we had teachers, though, that weren't afraid to stand up, and we were studying the history of in South Africa, the whole what was it called, the system they had in South Africa. And my teacher
apartheid.
Said to me, apartheid. He said, I've lived in South Africa for 4 years and I taught there. And he said, I'm afraid I'll have to tell you now, I agreed with apartheid. And he said that to all of us. And we were mixed colour. Like in New Zealand, when you grow up, you're half and half. There was half Maori, half white, basically. The teacher said he agreed with it. And he wasn't afraid to stand up and say that. If he did that now, he would have been frog marched out of that room and sacked. Yeah, absolutely. So I had, you know.
Do you guys have a human rights commission in Australia?
Sorry, say that.
Do you guys have a human rights commission in Australia?
Yes, of course. Yeah. I mean,
that's the chief administrator of hate speech.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're in it, but
it's a quasi criminal court system that they've created. I don't think it has any real. It's not criminal. It's just another layer of the judiciary that they've set up. Because none of these could be considered criminal, but they have a whole set of laws about hate speech. But I think
it's very much left here, and anyone under 50 that I know have been indoctrinated into the same very pro-left, pro. You know, if you dare talk about something different, you're a nutcase, and you're a conspiracy theorist, and you're a all of this bullshit, you know. I mean, it's
trying to,
but see, I don't get a center, and I thrive on that kind of talk. If someone tells me you shouldn't do something, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad.
Well, that's good.
That kind
we only have 45 minutes left. We're going to do about 2 hours, which is, we got so much to cover, and I know we're not going to get through it all, but you're going to be on the audio chat, I would think, more often than not. You are, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. Now that I've got on there.
You are verified, so you can get on there anytime and talk with anybody.
Do you know what made me go on here and actually bother to get you? Yeah, well, you know, it was the Gaia attack by Dave J thing the other day that I listened to. And I remember I was listening to it through, you know, it was early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard him come on and he attacked him, you know, and really, really just, you know, was saying stuff that I thought, that's not right, you know.
Gaia attacked Dave J?
No, Gaia was being attacked by Dave J.
Oh, okay, sorry. And there's so many interactions on this site, and people, please don't hold me accountable. I can't keep track of who's attacking
who.
And everyone,
you can't, but
everyone interacts differently. Okay, so Dave J went after Gaia, and Gaia...
Yeah.
Gaia has a special status here because he has put so much effort into Fakepedia.
Even if half of it is wrong,
I don't even know. I haven't read all the Fakepedia, but great effort.
It doesn't matter. Apart from the weird children in the background when he's doing his live.
Yeah, but they're gone now, I think.
apparently he's finally got a headset, thank God.
Yeah. Damn screaming Colombians.
Anyway.
19 stories down, or whatever.
It just sounded irritating because I can read a voice, and I can pick up on a voice, big time, and certain sounds really irritate me, and that irritated me, that kind of screeching that was going on in the background. But the next day he came on and I heard him saying, I think I'm going to pull off here. I'm not going to be on here because I need to put some time. And I knew exactly what had happened. He'd been absolutely pillared by that guy. He just jumped on there and said, your voice is doing this, and I can tell by your voice that you're a certain person. He came across as a school bully that was just being nasty.
Dave J gets like that. I think he starts going on that you're a deceiver or you're a...
I can't remember the other word he used.
Is that...
saying all that.
Yeah,
He was, but saying that, I liked what he was saying about other subjects until he started being really nasty. I think he's probably a really nice guy and he's got the right thing, but he just had a bee in his bonnet about Gaia. And the next day, Gaia was going, "Well, I've he was deciding he was going to pull out of the
yeah.
whole
well,
thing.
Well, he's pulled out a few times, but he's back and forth. Yeah, just
good.
It's
good.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
it's all right. And lots of people leave. It's too much for people. And listen, you got to just calm down in these chats. They're just. Most people wouldn't talk to each other face to face like this. So just keep that in mind. These are chats. Everyone needs to calm down. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, yeah. And I pick up on aggressiveness though, and I get that from like I'm quite a big fan of Jan Irvin's stuff, but I've seen him. He's done this more than once. He's had a guy on that be his offsider that would be chatting away and they're producing amazing stuff, absolutely amazing evidence. And next thing you know, Jan is attacking. He's done it. Steve Outram recently, who did the Steve Outram stuff on
Burning Man.
Is some,
it's very interesting stuff.
Very interesting.
And he's a Kiwi, isn't he?
He is. He's from Wellington. And not only is it good, it's verified. You can't argue with the stuff he's saying. He's got the thing. Next thing, then at the moment, he's being attacked as being a Satanist by Jan Irvin.
Jan Irvin is a strange individual.
Oh,
strange.
Yeah, he
I don't know. Is he on the bad side or the good side?
I don't know, but what he did with Jan and then Joe Atwell, he attacked Joe Atwell. And I listened to his attack. Like Joe Atwell's microphone wasn't working. And next thing you know, he's screaming at him like, turn it up, you know, like really aggressive. I just really upset. It kind of sent shockwaves. You know, this guy, like, has done great research. I don't agree with everything Joe Atwell says, but there's a lot of his stuff is good. And so they split up. So that there's people that come onto these forums and podcasts that just go out of their way to attack their former, and Jan's one of the probably the worst. Mm. Yet, some of the stuff he's come out is some of the best that I've heard. Jay Dyer's stuff is the best info that I've ever heard is his readings of the globalist books, like stuff he read. He goes through because I'm not a big. I can't read the kind of books that Dyer's clearly well educated and a good reader. Yeah. He
same with John Adams.
Absolutely fantastic, and John Adams up there with the best. But Adams has also got a sense of humour and can mimic. And
I Jay Dyer, mimic.
John Adams. No, I can. But
do you have an impression? What do you got there?
I tell you.
Can you do Rollo?
No, I can do a bit of John. I was like, Rollo, you blockhead.
It's not real! It is not real!
That's my impression. Not bad, eh?
It's good. It's almost, it's perfect.
Yeah.
James Corbett sounds like, either Kermit the Frog or, Ernie from Ernie and Bert off Sesame Street.
Yeah, I like Ernie.
He has, hey Bert, hey, you know, there's that same kind of inflection or whatever. But, you know, I can do all those, maybe not off the cuff right now, but
you'll have to practice.
I talk to myself because I've run out of people that will talk to me anymore, so I can.
Oh, by the way, that reminds me, I know I'm going to forget. Can you do a bumper for me? Because I always forget to ask.
Yeah.
Can you do it now?
Absolutely. If you want.
Do you have the script? I have the script written down under, where is it? Live stream show notes. It's under the pinned.
You're listening to Esoteric 64. And my favorite show is Fakeologist.
You need the script either. let's see here. Where is it here? Under system notes.
How about I just put a whole lot? I can put it on your audio notes thing and just put some. I'll put a whole lot there.
All right.
No.
Yeah, do it later.
Yeah, I'll do that.
You will remember then.
I'll do
okay.
That.
Yeah, do it later.
We'll talk about the Matrix film because the reason I mention it is I was only, I did film security for about 8 years or maybe more.
Okay. And whereabouts? Sydney?
In Sydney. And yeah. And I've been trying to kind of talk to people about this because I worked on that film where, as a security guard, where we were doing bodyguard work and standing next to the thing. It's like the Matrix. I worked on Mission Impossible, Matrix. I worked on the Heart to Heart with Robert Wagner, Baywatch, loads and loads and loads, all the big stuff. That was anything that was filmed in Sydney, I was probably there.
So hold on, the Matrix was done in Sydney?
Yeah, the whole lot. Oh. All three of them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And my good friend of mine had a company that was a stunt, they were stuntmen, and he was an ex Special Air Service major who started up a stunt company, and he, for most of the time, stunts are rare. Kind of, you know, you're not going to make a lot of money out of it because it doesn't last all year round. So to earn money, they were working as security guards or safety consultants on film. And I ended up working on most of the big productions. But what we did on Matrix was some of the biggest crowd control things that have ever been done, certainly in Australia. We cleared Sydney CBD of all people so they could fly a chopper down and film with a big camera at the bottom and film empty streets. So there was
probably
40 or 50.
How do you clear all the people?
By having 50, if not more, guys hiding in doorways and stopping people walking out.
So you have to block all the entrances and exits from buildings?
Yeah, yeah.
And how long can you do that before people just say, no, I got to get out of here,
You have 5 minutes as far as I'm concerned. And I'm quite good at that kind of thing because you can't be heavy with anyone. You have to be friendly and to say, look, can you just do me a favor and just don't walk out now?
That's interesting.
So you have 5 minutes max to stop people to say, look, I know you want to go out here. I know this is the front of your building. Because some people just won't accept, because a security guard has no rights whatsoever. You've got no rights of anything, really.
But if you tell them it's for a big movie, most people will conform
it. And guess what? That's what you did. And that's how you said things. You'd say, look, can you please?
Because people like to get along, and they also like to belong. I'm helping.
And they don't. But if you be, if there was like a lot of people couldn't do that kind of work because if you acted heavy and said, well, you can't do it. But if you know your rights, you can just say, well, fuck off. I'm going to walk. Sorry to swear, but I'm going to walk out now.
Yeah,
and I had no problem. So some of those scenes, one particular one, the one that where they did the chopper scene of an empty city. That was an incredible achievement because we managed to lock off an entire CBD area and get a clear shot without using CGI to edit people out.
Well, obviously that's way harder to do than just to do a nice shot. A nice shot is easier than CGI.
And one of the other interesting ones I was talking, because I've been talking about the stuff since in the last week or whatever that I've been on here, just to kind of, if anyone was interested, that one of the scenes was an explosion that they did for one of the, it was a building, a big glass tower, and the helicopter goes in the side of it and explodes, which was used in the first movie. And to do that scene, it took, I would say, there's probably 25 of us or maybe more out where they produced it was an area where the fire brigade have their base where they train as a training ground. So it's a lot of land, and they built this mock up of a building out of glass, which was about probably 10 foot, 20 foot high. I can't remember. Say it was 20 foot high. And they had a model helicopter that would swing into it and they'd detonate it and the whole building shattered at the same time.
And where did they do that?
Scene, in Sydney and in a place called Penrith at the fire brigade training center. I think.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Right. Yeah. So it's a cleared area right. where people aren't going to be clear, and they can create fires and whatnot. Okay.
That's right. But to do that, we had to, because of the subsonic explosion noise that mm-hmm. to detonate that building, they can create a subsonic blast noise, which can shatter windows apparently for up to a mile away. So we had to lock off roads at a mile surrounding the exterior of that building and stop them for 10 to 15 minutes. So every car that was coming down any road had to be stopped a mile away because they were scared that that explosion was going to shatter their windscreen.
Mm.
Now, the manpower involved in that is incredible. And plus to be able to get people to stop and lock off roads and get permission by the council to lock off a particular road. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. So a small scene that only lasted probably 3 seconds, it was 2 days of hard labor for a lot of people. So
yeah, that's the name of the game in the movie business. To create a minute of film takes days or weeks, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so a lot of people, what I was doing in that game, when I did the film security, I was standing around. Sometimes there were, you know, kind of bodyguards for the actors, or we were stopping public. And there was the manpower involved, though, for that was just massive. I mean, I've never seen anything. Maybe Mission Impossible had similar scenes that was done, but Matrix was massive. They really did through. And I sat there. I've always been into this Gnostic stuff and the esoteric and stuff like that. I didn't pick up on any single bit of that movie that was special to me. If I'd known that it was about what it was about, I would have been asking questions and talking to the actors and saying, "Well, do you know, what do you think about this and what do you think about that?" I didn't even pick up on any of that. And I'm not stupid or naive, but a film can be made. You can do a thing without anyone knowing what you're actually working on, and that's the kind of gist I have. You know that. And when we're talking about 911, and you know, how do you blow a building up without letting everyone know you're blowing a building up? It can be done.
Yes.
If everyone is working on a small part of a something or other, and they're not aware of what they're working on, you can do anything you like.
Compartmentalization, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yeah, and compartmentalization is how the works.
Yeah.
You know.
So anyone that's worked on a movie knows about it, because your scene could be shot last, even though it's the first scene. It's just totally.
Yeah, exactly.
There's just,
you wouldn't know.
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know. And I didn't pick up on how esoteric or Gnostic like The Matrix was for 10 to 15 years after they filmed it. When I was listening to podcasts, there's a couple of guys, I forget their podcast, but have done a thing on the symbolic meanings of The Matrix. And I listened to a couple and I was thinking, wow, you know, I was there, sitting there, and I didn't understand or pick up on any of that. And there was one, I'll tell you an interesting one. I was sitting there one day, they were filming a scene. It was inside an old, it was an old building, and they filled it full of old TVs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a scene it's kind of a crucial scene in the first movie where they're in a building and they filled it full of old TVs. Anyway, the place was empty. They weren't filming, and the two brothers, Wachowski brothers, came and they were there by themselves, and they met another guy, and I was sitting right next to them, standing there kind of watching away, and I heard them talking about stuff, and I didn't pick up on anything, and 4 or 5 years later, I worked out that they were sitting there talking about V for Vendetta, because the guy that they were sitting with was the assistant director who directed V for Vendetta. They were talking about the book V for Vendetta, because they had a comic in their hand. They were discussing stuff. So yeah. I was actually sitting there watching them, but I didn't pick up on it. I didn't listen. I didn't realize that they were discussing this movie that they were going to do. So when you talk about
compartmentalization, yeah.
Compartmentalization. Yeah, it is. It is at this hour of the night.
Yeah.
It's really possible. It's totally possible, because I would have gone, if I'd known what they were talking about, Alan Moore's book was being discussed, I would have roamed over and, you know, just
Rick, let me just stop you there. I got to take a quick washroom break. We'll go another 40 minutes or so. So I'm going to mute you just for a second here and go get a break, go get some water, and we'll play a little tunage here. Alrighty. Alrighty, I'm back. I'll unmute Rick there. Rick, how are you?
Good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm good. Sorry, I just had a little break there. I hope you had a break too.
Yeah, I did. All good.
I may cut out these songs. We had a little bit of Men Down Under.
No, you had Midnight Oil.
We had Midnight Oil, Blue Sky Mine. I know you don't like it, but that's one of my favorite bands.
No.
I don't care what his politics are.
No, they're a good band. There's no two ways about it.
No.
They're a great band.
And before that was Down Under. Who the heck is that? Men Without Hats? That's not Men Without Hats. That's
that was like a Canadian. Men at Work.
Men at Work, right. Yeah. Jeez.
And who was a Scotsman as well.
Oh, was he? I'm a great radio DJ. I don't know what song that was, but I really like it.
And that's good.
Oh, gee whiz. Well, we're having a great conversation with Rick, who's from Australia, originally from Tangerina in New Zealand, or whatever it's called, Tawanga. Tawanga. And what have we learned?
Tauranga.
Tauranga. These bloody native names. You see, Toronto is a native name, and we have Mississauga. Oh, yeah, they're all native names.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Well, we either have native names or we have British names. If you look at a map of Ontario where I live, we've got a city of London, and guess what river runs through it? The Thames River. Unbelievable. We're so original. Oh, no, yeah.
So this, unbelievable.
And it's in Oxford County, and we got Middlesex, and we've got Chatham and Cambridge and Kitchener. New Berlin, by the way.
He's a nasty piece of work, Kitchener. One of the nastier World War One generals.
Well, that's why they renamed the city New Berlin at World War II, and they renamed it Kitchener. So there you go. So they traded one for the other.
One for the other. And guess what? I think New Berlin was nicer than Kitchener.
Yeah, probably. It would have been a nice. Yeah, that was the name of the place.
He was a nasty piece of work. Allegedly.
And that town is right beside Waterloo. So there you go.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So that, come on, this is a British colony, and it always has been. We've got the Queen on our money, and...
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the whole thing. Yeah. But anyway, so we've learned a lot. I've moved the shop swag button on the top of fakeologist.com, so you can order a hat. And the first person to send a picture with the top of their head with the hat on it, or a shirt. You don't have to show your face. They'll win a prize.
What you need to do is have a fakeologist hat with anti 5G technology silver foil running through it.
Yeah. Okay. I know 5G is a 5G is a big thing, but I don't hear anything about it here. I know I've got.
Well, guess what? We're getting it here before you do. So Australia will be the test.
Well, I have my phone has LTE, which is Is that 4G or that, I thought that's that 4G. Was
4G. I'm on 4G.
Yeah, but mine says LTE, which is one better than 4G. So there.
Oh, really? Well, there you go. Well, then you win.
I think they call it different things, but LTE, it's pretty fast, you know. You have to admit that the technology we have in our hand is amazing. The things we can do.
Oh, you're not going to get an argument from me with that one.
But you're obviously on a smartphone now. Look at what it's done.
Yep, the latest model iPhone.
But it just proves to you, we can give people the greatest technology for communication, and they still can't get it together. People still can't put the effort in. They'd rather just sit there and have everything pushed down their throats. People are so lazy. And that's why I'm so grateful for content creators that can just get up and do something. Yeah, I gotta admit, just getting up to do this show, you know, you think about it a little bit, and sometimes you just think, I can't be bothered. Why bother? You know.
No, you've got to bother. Keep bothering.
You have to keep bothering. Like, I mean, if
if you didn't bother, I would. I'm a loudmouth, big talking, big thinking person.
Yeah.
But I would never have got on to this network if it wasn't for you people like you. You know what I mean? So there's a positive, big positive from you guys.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if I didn't get up, I wouldn't have met you, and I might have heard you on the other channels, and it's nice to meet you, and now you're probably going to come on more, and maybe there's someone like you who was slow to come on. Maybe they're going to come on now. It's just a whole thing that just creates a snowball effect, as it were, or a sandball in Australia.
A sandball, snowball.
Yeah. So it's great. And you're an older guy. We don't have too many seniors. I wouldn't call us seniors yet. We're getting up there.
Yeah, you've got Type O is 2 years older than me.
Yeah. So it's cool that you're right on the edge of technology in the sense that if you were a little older, you probably would be much slower to engage with technology because when you get to a certain age, you just don't want to learn anything new.
I know people in their 70s that can't use a mobile phone. Like my father's can answer a phone, but he has no idea how. He just knows the button comes up and he presses it. There's technophobes of the highest magnitude.
Yeah. Well, we have a middle ground where I love technology. I love what it can do, but the younger people are using these smartphones and these iPads, and they have no idea how to use them other than just a click, 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 touch, touch, touch.
Yeah.
They don't know any of the workings underneath. They don't know anything about programming. So we have a whole generation that is coming up almost as ignorant as the seniors who were too late to adopt the technology.
Possibly, yeah. The middle ground would be the 22-year-olds.
Maybe more. I don't know. Obviously, if you take computer science, you're going to learn about it. But for the vast majority of people, all they know of the YouTubes, the younger ones, or of the internet rather, are the YouTubes and the Facebooks and the Instagrams. They don't know. Yeah, you can create your own website. Yeah, you can have your own audio server. Yeah, you don't need any of these guys. And yes, it's harder to get your message out because if they control the search engines, but you can use other search engines. Google is not the only search engine. For instance, I use Sear, S-E-A-R dot.
I've heard of that one.
It's called Searx, SEARX.me. And that is a private, it gathers all the information from Google and Bing and whoever else is out there. And you can do your own searching. It doesn't keep track of what you search for. You don't have to log in. It's totally anonymous.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be creating a data file for Google or Facebook. You don't have to do it. There's a great big internet out there.
We're kind of told that you've got Google and Facebook. And
we're told, but they make it like any other business. They make it so easy that you just fall into it. They're not forcing you.
I've got an 11-year-old right now in there that can... That is big. He's on the Discord. That's all they do. They sit there with their little headsets on. They chat away.
Oh, is that your child?
They're on there.
did you say?
I've got three. Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, and they're all super into this, and the whole Discord chatting away, gaming, and they helped me. The funniest thing is that when I said to them, "Oh, I'm on Discord now, and I'm there chatting away," they were like, they gave me this look like, "What would you know?" like I was some kind of imbecile. It was kind of,
yeah. Well, you're a hip dad. Come on.
Yeah, I am a hip dad. I'd like to think so.
Good.
I try.
Yeah.
Do you
teach them about fecology at all?
My daughter's right into it.
Oh, really?
Good. Absolutely. She's going to be like she's got that John Adams kind of thing. She goes, "Dad, can you look into this?" Asked me, she said the other day, she goes, "Can you look up this psychologist she read about online who's into, you know, this kind of stuff?"
Yeah.
"Can you find the book or find out about him?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely." She's got that. There's a generation coming up that is definitely wide awake and not trusting of anything. So it's a good thing, you know. But I think it's few and far between. I think the average person just wants sport. They want
Do you let her know you're a psychologist though, or can you say those words?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, she'll listen to this.
Oh, beautiful. Shout out to your daughter. Hey, dad's famous. Yeah. Dad is worldwide.
Yeah, Stella.
Stella
is famous.
Dad's famous, Stella. See, he's a fakeologist. He's got his own episode 190 on the Fakeologist Radio Network.
It could have been 119.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite get there.
I don't know. Yeah. That was a long time ago. Yeah, I was going gangbusters at the beginning, but I slowed down and got sidetracked. And just, you know, a real person just comes and goes in terms of interest level and effort and encouragement. And you get burned out talking about it a little bit, I think. It's just human nature, though, more than anything.
Absolutely.
But, I could ask you so many questions, but, we'll give it another 15, 20 if you've got the time.
Do that, absolutely, round it off.
I might cut out the music and the interlude there, but yeah, we've been going an hour and a half. Let's do another 20 minutes. What do you think of? Let's just go quickly because we don't want to get too deep in. We've got sublogs here.
You ask me questions.
We got sublogs here. What do you think of the first sublog I created, which was Flat Earth? Are you interested in the nature of the planet at all?
Very, very much.
Oh boy. Okay. What do you think? What are we living on? Do you have an opinion? Do you need to have an opinion?
I don't know what we're living on.
Oh, get a little closer to your phone there.
I don't know what we're living on.
Yeah.
But I know the measurements that we've been given are completely and utterly false.
Okay. And I'm sure you don't think that the images NASA gives are accurate.
Fake.
Okay. So
100% fake. Yeah.
So the question is then, why are they faking it? Is it because they can't go up high enough to take a good picture?
That's what I would say. I'll tell you a funny thing. I took my kids to the Canberra, which is our capital.
Yeah.
They
have a beehive there, don't they? No.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, absolutely. But it's not called the beehive. May as well, but it's called, I don't know what it's called. But anyway, I took my kids. We all went to the National Science Museum, which is a fantastic place.
Okay.
And we went into a lecture. It was so funny because my youngest, who's right into this stuff, and he's the expert.
He's into fakeology or science?
Yeah, but I think a bit of both. I think he's got my genetics of the cynic. Anyway, the guy came out and he said to everyone, he said, "How far do you think we've been since 1972 in space?" And he held out, he had a golf ball in one hand and a golf ball, which was meant to be the moon, in the other hand. And he said, "This is the Earth." He goes, "How far have we been into space since 1972 and to me, I thought maybe halfway up his arm, you know, I couldn't quite work out the what way was doing it. And in the end, he said the actual correct answer was about a millimeter off the top of his left hand, or not even that. If you held your arms outstretched and the left hand was your Earth and the right hand was the moon, we've basically been allegedly about a millimeter above the left hand. Everyone got it wrong. Everyone said, oh, halfway or quarter way or third. Some said further. And I said to my son, I said, what did you think? He goes, Dad, I didn't want to say anything I didn't want to upset.
He doesn't want to be a dissenter. Is it called Questacon?
Yes.
The National Science and Technology Center.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's just one of those things that kids just love. You know, it's you know, it might be spiders or snakes or moons.
Yeah. Well, we have a couple of those in our area too. We have one in Sudbury where Alan Watts live. We have one in Toronto.
Oh, mm-hmm. So you're not far from Alan?
4 hours.
Oh, it's a lot.
Four hours in Sudbury, and it's north, so that means there's more snow and it's colder. So I don't tend to go there ever.
No. But Do you think he's in the middle of? Is he in the middle of like nowhere, or is he in a regional?
Well, Sudbury is a tiny mining town, and you wouldn't have to drive far until you're in the bush. And it does have a moon, if you believe in the official story of what the moon surface is. There's a very moon-like feel to Sudbury when you just drive two minutes outside of their downtown, which is just a bunch of government building. Yeah. So
he's always complaining about those ones.
Yeah.
I listened to him. I was telling you, on a Monday, I get his podcast comes through.
So he's still doing a podcast weekly or daily?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah?
Absolutely.
What's he talking about? Because I don't pay any attention to him, honestly.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I'll tell you exactly. His main thing is still to this day the British whatever it called the initial group that did the South Africa incursion.
The Boers?
The British Institute of the Royal Institute of the RIIA or whatever they are.
The Royal Institute of something or other.
Whatever. That always gets mentioned. And I'm telling you, I've listened to every single one of his podcasts maybe twice.
Really?
And I'm
you're a huge fan.
Because I initially got woken up in the late 80s, but the guy across the road from me was a Scottish guy who was an ex-army engineer. And he used to come across and tell everybody that he could find that was willing to listen to him about Carol Quigley's books, about the Holocaust, about this, about that. He was locked on the Holocaust, though. He couldn't move from that particular subject. And so he was pilloried.
So who are we talking about? Alan Watts' friend?
No, he was just the guy that used to live across the road. He was our next neighbor. But this is back in 78, 79. So I was listening to him. He used to come across the road. But I have to say this, everything he said and warned about, everything has come true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said there'd be free trade agreements. He was talking about free trade agreements back in 79.
Okay.
This was going to happen. And this
we got our free trade with America in 88.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it went through. They'd already written about it.
Yeah.
So I had he was a bit of an Alan Watt type, but kind of a bit older, I guess. So I find Alan Watt's voice really comforting, and I trust his. I've got a good ear for. I can kind of read a voice.
Yeah.
And I believe he believes what he's saying, and I believe what he's saying is pretty on the money, but he doesn't talk about certain things because he's aware of what's going to happen clearly in the future if you do talk about certain things.
Yeah.
I like the Higher Side chats with whatever his name
is. Greg Carlson.
I listen to that. Greg Carlson. It's either really good or really bad, but most of the time it's really good. I listen to Freeman, who's had two really good people on lately that I thought was fantastic, and then he said some really crap stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to Hoaxbusters. I listen to Jay Dyer. I listen to the guy that came through you guys, the propaganda at Propaganda.
Yeah, A.A. Morris, he's good stuff.
A.A. Morris, fantastic.
Yeah, very really good stuff.
I like his voice. He's got a – he's just – I can pick a voice, and I'm usually right that they mean what they say, and that's the important thing, that someone's talking that they actually mean what they're talking about, because there's stuff out there online that you've got just bullshit artists, the best way to describe them, but there's a lot of UFO type alien stuff that's flooding the airwaves. I like who's the other people I listen to? I listen to Crows 777 just because of the fact he is out there, you know, and he's not afraid to be out there, which I like. Another ex-military type, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But, I listen, but I'm not joking. I do 10 to 15 hours a day of podcasts.
No, that's a lot. That's more than me. I do listen to a lot of audio myself, but sometimes
You actually remind me of when I first listened to This American Life years ago.
Oh,
the
okay.
guy that hosted it. Your voice sounds similar. Could be. I'm not sure the guy's name, but you actually come across similar to his gist that he had.
Yeah.
That's a great show.
I find him a mumble. He says, "Welcome back to This American Life. I'm Eric Glass." He mumbles. I can't even understand what he's saying at the time. He's not a great broadcaster, but
no.
But I like stories, and yeah. So have you been on my other sub blog, More Ab?
Yes,
because I do put This American Life stuff over there too. Do you listen to those?
Yeah, I do. It's fantastic. It's a good show. I don't mind that.
Well, it's highly produced. Highly produced. We know they're not on the good side, but it's just fine. Fun to listen to highly produced audios sometimes.
Yeah,
compared to this slapstick comedy that I'm on now.
Let me say, some of the best stuff I've ever heard comes from the Opperman Report, right? But it's the worst produced stuff I've ever heard in my life.
What is it? The Opperman Report?
Opperman.
Opperman? Where's that?
He's in Las Vegas. He's an ex private eye.
Okay. So that's good stuff?
Fantastic stuff. Like, really, really good. He had what he did to kind of get himself out there. He had Jay Dyer, and I think John Adams has been on Opperman. He's an ex-private eye, lives in Las Vegas, but some of the stuff, if you go back, he said he's right into the whole he's got a good voice, but he's got a really badly produced show.
Can you download him? Because he's on American Freedom Radio, which means that you have
to pay. Yeah, he is.
Okay.
Yeah. I just think I've picked up some really amazing stuff because he gets guys like ex-private eye types that have, or ex-policemen, you know, that have done the circuit that want to talk to him, that get on there. So you kind of pick up, out of a 2-hour show, you get an absolute gem.
All right, I'll pick him up. I see him here, Opperman Report. He's got a show for today already, April 1st.
Yeah, he's good. He's good, but terrible.
John Barber's World. Oh, John Barber's the guy from Real People.
He's good as well. John Barber, he's the one that's got Frank Sinatra in his intro, that apparently Frank Sinatra introduced him on some show.
These guys are kind of mainstream and kind of not.
They kind of are, but they kind of not. More the kind of not.
I'll listen to him. I'll try him. Well, he's got some of the mainstream people that we know are sort of not on the right side. He's got Porkins Policy Radio. I don't know if they're
he's interesting.
Yeah,
I find because he has some good stuff, but you got to filter it out.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So that's basically
we're smart enough to filter it out. He's got Alex Jones on there. Yeah, okay.
There's a classic one. I mean, Alex Jones is to me totally fake. His voice is fake. I read his voice as soon as I listened to him. I thought he's putting the kind of accent and the kind of rough talk that he was doing was fake. It didn't come across as being his real voice.
Yeah.
But you can pick up some good stuff off it. So you just got to if you've got a good filter, you can do these, you know, non-mainstream and mainstream broadcasters. I go by voices and how they sound, and do I believe what I want to know, do they believe what they're saying?
Yes.
And that's the hard part. Because there's people that I can tell are just saying it just for them. And the classic one is the, what's his name? He does a great big kind of X-Files type stuff. He's one of the biggest.
Coast to coast.
Yeah. Totally fake.
Yeah, I know.
Just doing it for the money. You know, doing it for the prestige and doing it for the whatever. They get you in, you listen to it, and they take you in a different direction. I believe hoaxbusters and guys like that. I listen to them. They genuinely believe what they're saying. And you can tell what they believe what they're saying. And that means more to me than anything.
Yeah, they're passionate. Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, they're passionate. They're not doing it for the prestige or the whatever. They just want to get some truth out there.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. We're trying.
But I say this about the flat earth stuff. It is a total distraction as far as the worst stuff I've ever heard on hoaxbusters were the arguments of flat earth when they had she calls herself Psy Girl or Psy
Lynn.
Psy Girl Lynn.
Yeah.
Highly intelligent, really interesting person.
Yeah.
But manages to turn a 3-hour podcast into 2 hours of just arguments.
Yeah, she's argumented. I always thought it was a guy, but everyone's convinced it's a girl.
I think she's a guy too.
Oh, you do?
Yep.
Okay.
I picked up on that. Yeah. Well, it came across to me.
You're the first one that agreed with me. I thought I was dissenting unnecessarily, but yeah, okay.
Nah, listen, I can read a voice. I've got this ability, and I'm not going to, I'm not saying especially, but I can hear a voice. You know, hard to explain, but I know who I'm listening to if they're being honest.
Yeah.
And she definitely came across as a guy.
Okay.
In my mind. Yeah. So, yeah. But, and maybe she's not. Maybe she's got too many male hormones. I don't know. But the arguments that when she appears, it just degenerates into this blind screaming match of. Really, and it's if you're into audio, I can't stand when it's people arguing.
Well, yeah, sometimes it's fun for a bit, but then it becomes tiring.
It's just tiring, and you lose it.
Yeah.
So, a great subject can become poisonous to you where it shouldn't be. It should become something that you should be listening to, and they can manage to send it into a chaotic bitch fest. So, yeah. That's my opinion on the situation.
And we'll do one more. My other sub-blog is egi.fakeologist.com.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea is so outrageous, I thought I'd separate it. And what do you think of that one?
Bring back Alan Watt again. His stuff, I read his book. A friend of mine had ordered it online. And he was talking about the whole inversion Masonic bringing in, you know, the female to male becoming one and all this stuff like that. So there's something in there. There's no doubt about that. There's something in this whole it's inversion male to the female, female to the male. Yeah, so I don't know, but I'm very open-minded with that subject.
This morning, nearly 950...
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I was putting another clip that I saw. I heard on the news that there's a story on CNN that, or whatever news network, that 4,000 eggs and embryos were lost at a Cleveland clinic, which...
Really?
Well, that's, they said that the cooling system failed, but my theory is that they do breed humans, sadly, and maybe this story is, I don't know if it's fake or not, but maybe it's just a way of basically stealing embryos. You know, they put out this fake story that they were lost. Okay, nobody can prove that they were lost.
Have you seen the ingredients of makeup and things like that? Female makeup, you know, skin toning things, whatever. It's full of estrogen, full of the only way that they can get that stuff is from placenta.
Well, that's what they say. I don't know if that's true. But the point is that these lost eggs, this is just a theft, basically. And I think these children could be born somewhere and implanted and basically stolen, and they could be used as corporate children. I believe there's corporate underground children that are used for all kinds of nasty things. Because if you don't belong to anybody, then nobody's looking for you.
Yeah, you're a perfect person for whatever they want to do to you.
Absolutely. And honestly, you know, if you're thinking of blowing a load into a glass to make $500, you got to remember you are definitely giving half the ingredients of life. I think it's wrong. It's just wrong. There's just too many people that do bad things that can take what you think is a good thing, and
you've got to go with your gut instinct with all the stuff. Because I mean, I've been going with it for years, and usually, sadly, I'm right at the end of the day. When you get a twinge, there's something sus about this, and sadly, you're usually right. There is something bad about it. And I get on the front page of one of our papers here about 2 years or a year ago. It was a picture of they shot them from the back. It was a Chinese couple, and they were requesting a termination of an 8-month-old baby in her womb, because she'd had a genetic test that said it may have an issue with its left arm. And I remember thinking, what the fuck? May have an issue, not has got an issue, may have an issue. And they were trying to get the termination date moved forward, because it was apparently only to terminate after 7 months. I'm not sure what it is. Mm-hmm. But I just remember thinking, you know, we're entering the zone now.
Yeah.
My first child was born 25 weeks premature.
Oh, wow. That's less than half.
Yeah, the highest level. He was the highest level you could be born here in Australia.
To survive, the possibility of survival. So he was only basically 15 weeks old.
Yeah.
And which is unbelievable they can keep that kind of person alive.
I was there when it happened, and it was the most harrowing thing I've ever experienced.
How much did your child weigh?
750 grams. And when they cut the umbilical cord,
700. How many ounces is that? Grams and pounds.
725.
Grams. 750 grams and pounds. Let's see here.
It was less. It was less than a pound of butter. So
1.6 pounds. Whoa.
Okay. Yeah. And anyway, when he came out, his fingers had perfectly formed little fingernails on them.
Oh, isn't that something? Huh.
He had his toes. His face.
I guess we know your. I guess we know your stand on abortion.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you don't need to mention that, but he. Yeah. we were taken into a room straight afterwards, and luckily we went to a really good hospital, and by miracle, and I do say miracle,
yeah,
one of the leading pediatric infant surgeons was on duty that night. He was an English guy, tall guy, who had no bedside manner at all, but he just came and he said, this is going to, you know, this will probably happen. He'd probably be blind. He'll probably be this. He'll probably, you know, probably not walk properly. And we were kind of, you know, do you want to keep the procedure going? You know, that's what we kind of said. And we were both in shell shock, and we said, yes, you know, of course we want him to.
Yeah. So how did he turn out?
And he's in there now. He's the fastest runner at school.
Whoa, isn't that amazing? So he's perfectly normal.
The top 10% of English comprehension.
So you're saying we only need 15 weeks in the oven, and you can put out a genius.
Yeah.
What a hopeful story. That's fantastic.
So he's basically
normally a woman doesn't announce their pregnancy until after 3 months, because 3 months is just
He was basically three months.
So he's about 3 months. So he just made it over the official, this is going to work out.
No lungs. So when he came out, he was intubated and put into the thing. I just didn't have any comprehension of what I was going to go through, or what we were going to go through. We were 110 days in life support.
Oh, 110, 110. Okay, yeah.
And we're ringing up every half an hour some days to find out if he's still,
is he still alive?
Make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a miracle story.
He was. And they actually said that to us because they gave him no hope. They said this, they basically said, you basically got to rely on a miracle, and we got it. And as I say, he's in there now, and tall, good looking, smart athlete. Funny, good sense of humour, all of those things, and we got it. But you know, when you look at the Chinese model, they would have just said, nah, gone, turn the machine off.
Mm-hmm.
We were offered that 3 or 4 times while he was in there, and I just said, no, I'm not taking that.
Oh, good for you.
He's gonna,
well, yeah. So you believe you're definitely going to be someone who... Yeah, that's great. Well, that's a good story. Well, maybe we should end the broadcast on that hopeful, happy note.
Yeah,
so shout out to your son, who's just a miracle.
And it's 1119, so it's 911 backwards.
1119? Well, you're. Yeah. So this is a real story, though. We shouldn't be looking for clues for fakery from this.
Oh, no, it's real. It's all real. Yeah.
Is your son a fakeologist as well?
He probably is. I don't force my views down into any of them, but he's very similar to me, but my daughter's the most amazing one, because I never tried, and I let them think of their own, have their own minds about stuff. They listen to my kind of offhanded comments or whatever, but I know they've got the gene, and that's all I need. And it also needs to be cynical.
If you believe in genes.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I say genes, I mean...
Biology, maybe.
Biology, personality.
They got your biology. They got your personality.
Yeah, my mother was exactly the same. She was always, you know, worried about the sprays and what they were doing to people and stuff. I grew up like that. And you need to have a bit of cynicism, but you've got to have some positivity as well. So I've got both.
Well, beautiful. Well, that's a hopeful note to end on, and I thank you definitely for joining me.
And I thank you for setting up what you've done, because you've done a really good job.
Oh, thank you. And I hope you continue to participate in the audio chat.
And I'm going to. Don't worry about that.
Thanks to Rolo for pointing out that you're one of the very interesting people to talk to on Fakeologist, one of the new people. Rolo's always trying to help out, and Napoleon as well.
He's got a great, lovely people.
Yeah, and it's amazing how many Australians are on this. I can't even think of the last Canadian. That's just, I don't know, what are Canadians doing?
I keep thinking that why there's so many Canadians, because we've got Alan, Ontario, Ewan, Ontario, near Ontario. So you can't complain about.
Who else is in Ontario? There's me, Alan Watt, and who?
There's a couple. There actually is a couple more. I can't think of the band.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
Podcast. Oh, no, there's someone else. I'll think of them and I'll post it to you.
All right. Yeah, but there seems to be way more Australians in the audio chat for sure. I didn't know there were so many Australians that are interested in this, but they're definitely overrepresented. It's amazing.
I haven't met any real ones. I mean, people on. So,
yeah. Well, I think it's time for a fakeologist meetup in Sydney area. You can have Rolo, John LeBon. You can have Golden Earring or whatever his name is from Perth. Frank the Salt Guy can come up. You guys could put on a pretty good. I can't think of that many around here where I could have a meetup. Honestly.
Sure. You're probably not wrong. You're not wrong there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we've got Nexus magazine comes out of this area, and that kind of. Plenty of thinkers amongst them.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway,
do you have a closeout song you want to close out to? A favorite? Rose Tattoo. I never heard of them. Are they Australian?
No. They're great. The Angels Coming Down on Me.
What's that?
Put it on. It's kind of, it mentions Big Brother and Orwell.
Who are they? Who's the band?
The Angels. The Angels, and put it Coming Down on Me.
It says Antipodes.
No, Angels.
Oh, the Angels Me. Coming Down. The Angels are a hard rock band. Oh, okay.
That's them. Yeah, sorry, but it's good stuff.
It's hard rock. We'll play a bit. Let's see how we can go.
All right.
Nice chatting with you. See you on the audio chats. All right, take care.
Bye.
That's cutting out a bit. Let me just bring it up a bit. All right, thanks, guys, for listening. Fakeologist 190, here we go. We're closing out with the Angels Coming Down, Australian band, and thanks for listening again, and we will talk soon.
Hello, this is Tom Dalper, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.